A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about something every passenger has heard, but almost nobody understands. The captain gets on the PA and says we're waiting for a slot, or we got an earlier slot, and you just sit there thinking, okay, is that like a parking space? And then there's the other side of it, where airlines talk about slots like they're billion-dollar assets being auctioned and traded. So how does slot allocation actually work in practice? Are there two different systems running at the same time? And when slots are booked by airlines, does the price fluctuate according to demand? There's a lot to unpack here.
There really is. And the captain's announcement is the perfect entry point because it exposes the central confusion. Most people hear the word slot and assume it's one thing, but aviation actually runs two completely different slot systems in parallel, and they barely talk to each other. One is about who has the right to operate a flight at all. The other is about exactly when that flight actually pushes back from the gate today, in this weather, with this traffic.
When I'm sitting in seat 22C, and the captain says we've been given an earlier slot, which system am I hearing about?
You're hearing about the dynamic system, the real-time air traffic control slot. But the reason your flight exists in the first place, the reason that airline is allowed to fly from, say, JFK to Heathrow at 8 in the morning, that's the historic slot system. And that one is where the real money lives.
To find a slot for me, not the dynamic version, not the historic version, just the thing itself.
A slot, at its core, is a scheduled time for an aircraft to take off or land at a coordinated airport. And coordinated is a specific term here. IATA, the International Air Transport Association, classifies airports into three levels. Level 1 is basically unconstrained, no slot needed. Level 2 is somewhat congested, slot facilitation is encouraged but not mandatory. Level 3 is the big one. These are airports where demand exceeds capacity and every single movement requires a slot. Heathrow, JFK, Frankfurt, Narita, Beijing Capital, these are all level 3. At these airports, a slot isn't a physical parking spot at the gate. It's temporal permission to use the runway at a specific time window. The gate is allocated separately by the airport, usually by the handling agent. The slot is purely about the runway.
So it's not a thing you can point at. It's a right to occupy a piece of airspace at a specific moment.
And that moment is usually defined as a 15-minute window. You have a slot for, say, 10 a.m. arrival, which means you need to be on the runway between 9:55 and 10:10. If you're outside that window, you've missed your slot. And at a level 3 airport, that means you're not landing until they can fit you in somewhere else, which could be hours later.
The slot is the permission slip. Now walk me through the two systems. Start with the one that makes Heathrow slots more expensive than actual London real estate.
That's the historic allocation system, and it all centers on something called the IATA Slot Conference. Twice a year, November for the summer season, June for the winter season, airlines from all over the world gather to negotiate slots at level 3 airports. The whole thing is governed by the Worldwide Slot Guidelines, the WSG, which IATA just updated to its 11th edition in 2024. The foundational principle is something called grandfather rights.
That sounds like the sort of thing that makes a new airline want to throw a chair through a window.
It absolutely is. Here's how it works. If an airline holds a slot at a level 3 airport and uses it at least 80% of the time during a season, they automatically retain the right to that same slot in the equivalent season next year. Use it or lose it, but the bar is only 80%, which means you can cancel one out of every 5 flights and still keep your slot forever. This creates an enormous barrier to entry. If you're a new airline and you want to start flying to Heathrow, you can't just show up and buy a slot. The incumbents, British Airways, Virgin Atlantic, the big carriers, they've held their slots for decades. And as long as they keep using them 80% of the time, they never have to give them up.
The slots never actually go back into any kind of pool. They're inherited in perpetuity.
And this is where the secondary market comes in. In the European Union and the UK, airlines are legally permitted to trade slots. So if an airline wants a slot at Heathrow and doesn't have one, they can buy one from an incumbent. But there's no central exchange, no listed price. These are bilateral negotiations. Airline A calls Airline B and says, what would it take for you to part with that 6 a.m. arrival slot? And the price depends on the airport's constraints, the time of day, and the strategic value to the buyer.
How much are we talking?
The numbers are staggering. In April of this year, 2026, Oman Air reportedly paid £75 million for a single daily slot pair at Heathrow Terminal 5. That's the highest price ever recorded for a slot pair. To put that in perspective, in 2016, Air France KLM sold a slot pair to Oman Air for £50 million. So in 10 years, the price of a Heathrow slot pair went up 50%. And we're not talking about a physical asset. We're talking about the right to land and take off once a day.
£75 million for permission to use a runway. The sloth in me wants to point out that I could nap for 1,000 years on that kind of money.
You could, and you'd still have change left over for leaf medicine. But here's the thing. The price makes sense when you understand what that slot unlocks. A 6 a.m. arrival at Heathrow from, say, Dubai or Doha, that's premium. You land early, your passengers connect to the morning bank of European departures, and your aircraft can turn around and head back to the Gulf by mid-morning. The slot isn't just about the time, it's about the network synergies. A slot at 11 p.m. is worth a fraction of that 6 a.m. slot because you can't feed connecting traffic at midnight.
Time of day pricing for invisible assets.
The market is remarkably opaque. There's no slot price index, no Bloomberg terminal for runway rights. Deals are private. We only find out about prices when they leak or when airlines disclose them in financial filings. IATA facilitates the process through the slot conference, but the actual trading happens off to the side, what insiders call the gray market. It's all perfectly legal in Europe and the UK, but it's not transparent.
You mentioned Europe and the UK specifically. What about the United States?
Completely different system. At the three constrained U.S. airports, JFK, LaGuardia, and Reagan National, in Washington, slots are allocated by the FAI through an administrative process. There's no secondary market, no trading. The FAI periodically runs what's essentially a lottery for available slots, and airlines can't sell slots to each other. If Delta decides it doesn't want a slot at LaGuardia anymore, it can't sell it to JetBlue. It has to return the slot to the FAI pool, and then the FAI reallocates it.
The U.S. has a command economy for runway access, while Europe has a market.
That's exactly the tension. And both systems have problems. The European market system allows efficient allocation. Slots go to the airlines that value them most, which in theory means the routes that passengers value most. But it also entrenches incumbents and makes it nearly impossible for low-cost carriers to break into Heathrow. The U.S. administrative system prevents slot hoarding and keeps the process fair in a procedural sense, but it also means slots don't flow to their highest value use. An airline that could generate more revenue from a LaGuardia slot can't buy it from a less efficient holder.
You either get a rigged market or a frozen bureaucracy.
This gets us to the scandal that exposed how perverse the grandfather rights system can become. During COVID, the 80% use it or lose it rule was suspended globally. From March 2020 to March 2022, airlines didn't have to fly at all to keep their slots. Makes sense, nobody was flying. But when the waiver was partially reinstated in 2023, the EU introduced something called justified non-use provisions, which were supposed to let airlines keep slots without flying if they could prove demand hadn't recovered. The problem was, some airlines didn't trust the provisions, so they flew empty planes. Lufthansa alone operated 18,000 empty flights in 2023 to retain slots during the partial waiver period. That's 18,000 flights with nobody on board, burning roughly 100,000 tons of fuel unnecessarily. The environmental and financial absurdity of it was staggering. The EU responded by tightening the rules. The revised slot regulation, effective March 2025, now requires 75% usage, slightly lower than 80, but with much stricter justification requirements for non-use. You can't just say, demand is soft. You have to prove it.
They lowered the bar slightly, but made the paperwork harder. That's the European compromise in a nutshell.
And it hasn't fully solved the problem. airlines still have an incentive to fly marginal routes rather than risk losing a valuable slot. The ghost flights might be gone, but the underlying perversity of the system remains.
All right, so that's the billion-dollar asset side. Now let's switch to the other system, the one I actually hear about when I'm sitting on the tarmac. The captain says we've been given an earlier slot. What's actually happening there?
This is the dynamic air traffic control slot system, and it's completely separate from the historic allocation system we've been discussing. When the captain announces an earlier slot, they're referring to something called a calculated takeoff time, or CTOT. In Europe, CTOs are managed by Eurocontrol's network manager. In the United States, the FII's Air Traffic Control System Command Center issues something similar called an Expected Departure Clearance Time, or EDCT. These are real-time adjustments to departure times based on current conditions, weather, congestion, and route capacity, and arrival slot availability at the destination.
The CTOT is different from the scheduled departure time printed on my ticket.
Your ticket says 10 a.m. departure, but the network manager might assign your flight a CTOT of 10:45. That means your aircraft is not permitted to push back until 10:45, because if it left at 10 a.m., it would arrive at a time when the destination airport or some en route sector is already saturated. The CTOT is the real gatekeeper. And here's what most passengers don't realize. Airlines pad their schedules to account for this. Your 10 a.m. flight might be scheduled for an hour and a half block time, but the actual flight time is an hour and 15. The extra 15 minutes is padding to absorb CTOT delays. This is how airlines can claim an on-time arrival even when you spend 40 minutes sitting at the gate waiting for a slot.
The on-time performance metric is a beautiful piece of theater.
It really is. The metric is based on the schedule, not the CTOT, so an airline can look punctual even when the ATC system is melting down. It's one of those things where once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Walk me through the earlier slot announcement. The captain says we were delayed, but now we've got an earlier slot. What just happened?
Here's the sequence. Your flight was supposed to depart at 10 a.m., but the inbound aircraft was late arriving, so you're still boarding at 10:15. The airline's operations center files a delay with the network manager, and the network manager assigns you a new CTOT, say 11 a.m. But then conditions change. Maybe a thunderstorm that was sitting over the destination airport clears faster than forecast. Maybe another flight cancels, freeing up capacity. The network manager recalculates and issues a revised CTOT now, 10:30. That's the earlier slot. The captain gets a message through the aircraft's data link system, and they announce it to the cabin.
It's not just luck or the captain's sweet-talking air traffic control. It's a real system recalculation.
And in Europe, airlines can actively request earlier CTOTs through something called the Slot Allocation Message System, or SAM. The airline's operations center monitors the CTOTs for all its flights and can submit requests to the network manager. If capacity has opened up, the network manager can approve the request and issue an improved slot. In the US, the system is more rigid. EDCTs issued under a ground delay program are generally not negotiable. You get your time, and you wait.
The European system is more flexible, but also more complex. The US system is simpler, but less adaptable.
That's the trade-off, and it leads to some interesting behavior. Eurocontrol found that in 2024, 12% of CTOs were never used. Airlines would request a later slot to buy time. Maybe they're still loading bags or waiting for connecting passengers, and then cancel it at the last minute. But the slot had already been reserved, meaning other flights couldn't use that window. These unused slots create cascading delays throughout the system.
Slot hoarding in real time.
And Eurocontrol cracked down on this. New rules in 2025 impose fines of €500 per unused CTOT. If you reserve a slot and don't use it, you pay. The early data suggests it's working. Slot misuse dropped about 30% in the first 6 months.
The historic system has grandfather rights and ghost flights, and the dynamic system has CTOT hoarding and €500 fines. Both systems have people gaming the rules. The difference is the timescale, decades versus minutes.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The two systems interact in ways that create real operational headaches. An airline might hold a valuable historic slot at Heathrow for a 10 a.m. arrival. That slot is worth tens of millions of pounds. but if ATC assigns a CTOT that pushes departure back by 2 hours, the airline loses the benefit of that historic slot. They'll arrive at noon, miss their connections, and the slot's network value evaporates. This is why airlines employ slot coordinators, people whose entire job is to monitor CTOTs in real time and negotiate with network managers to protect their valuable arrival slots.
There's a human being whose career consists of arguing with Eurocontrol about whether a plane can leave Frankfurt 5 minutes earlier.
They're some of the most stressed people in aviation. The stakes are enormous. If a slot coordinator at British Airways fails to protect a prime Heathrow arrival slot, the knock-on effects ripple through the entire network. Missed connections, aircraft out of position for subsequent flights, crew duty time violations. One bad CTOT can cascade into millions of pounds in disruption costs.
That's a lot of pressure for what sounds like a very unglamorous job. Nobody grows up wanting to be a slot coordinator.
Nobody grows up knowing the job exists. But it's one of those invisible roles that keeps the entire system from collapsing.
You mentioned that the two systems don't talk to each other. Why isn't there a unified slot system?
They were built for different purposes by different institutions at different times. The historic system dates back to the 1940s, when IATA first started coordinating schedules to avoid chaos at congested airports. It was designed for a world of regulated national carriers and slow growth. The dynamic system emerged later, in the 1970s and 80s, as air traffic control technology improved and controllers could manage flows in real time. They have different governance. IATA runs the slot conference, while Eurocontrol and the FAI run the dynamic systems. They have different databases, different software, different rules. And legacy airlines have a strong incentive to keep the historic system intact because they're the ones holding all the valuable grandfather slots.
The incumbents are blocking integration.
They're not blocking it actively. There's no conspiracy. But they have no reason to support reforms that would weaken their grandfathered positions. If you proposed replacing the biannual slot conference with a real-time auction system where anyone could bid for CTOTs, British Airways and Lufthansa would lose billions in slot asset value overnight. Their balance sheets actually carry slots as intangible assets. Reforming the system would be an accounting catastrophe.
Slots on the balance sheet. So these aren't just operational permissions. They're booked as assets, like buildings or patents.
They're some of the most valuable intangible assets in the world. IATA estimates the total value of slots at Level 3 airports globally is somewhere north of $50 billion. That's a conservative estimate. Some analysts put it closer to $100 billion, and it's all built on a system that was designed when prop planes were still the norm.
Where is this heading? I know there have been experiments with real-time slot trading. What's the state of that?
This is one of the most promising developments. In 2025, Frankfurt Airport ran a trial with Lufthansa and Condor where airlines could exchange CTOTs in real time through a digital platform. The idea was simple. If Lufthansa had a 10 a.m. CTOT but was running late, and Condor had a 10:30 CTOT but was ready to go, they could swap. The result was a 15% reduction in delays across the trial flights. That's meaningful. 15% fewer passengers sitting at the gate waiting for a slot.
That sounds like a clear win. Why isn't this everywhere?
Because only 3% of eligible slots were actually swapped. Airlines were extremely reluctant to give up a good CTOT, even temporarily, because they didn't trust that they'd get equivalent value in return. The platform worked technically, but the behavioral economics didn't align. Airlines are risk-averse when it comes to their most constrained resource. They'd rather hold a slot they might not use perfectly than trade it and risk not having it when they need it.
Even when you build the market, people hoard.
Hoarding is the natural instinct when the asset is scarce and non-fungible. A slot at 8 a.m. isn't the same as a slot at 8:30, even if they're both morning slots. The value is hyper-specific to the airline's network. And the Frankfurt trial, for all its promise, didn't solve the trust problem. The next phase, which is supposed to launch later this year, will include a guaranteed fallback mechanism. If you swap your slot and then need it back, you get priority. The hope is that this reduces the perceived risk enough to increase participation.
In the US?
The FAI's NextGen program and Europe's CSAR are both moving toward more dynamic slot management. But the US has a bigger hurdle because the historic slot system there is administrative rather than market-based. The FAI Reauthorization Act of 2026, which just passed a few months ago, includes provisions for studying secondary slot trading at U.S. airports. It doesn't authorize trading yet, but it directs the FAI to report on how a market-based system might work. That's a significant shift. The U.S. has historically been hostile to the idea of slot trading, and this is the first time Congress has formally asked the FAI to consider it.
The U.S. might eventually join the market-based approach. That would be a huge change.
But it's going to be a fight. The legacy carriers will resist anything that forces them to give up slots they've held for decades. The low-cost carriers and new entrants will push for it. And the FAI is caught in the middle, trying to balance efficiency with fairness and political pressure.
Let's talk about the future beyond airlines. You mentioned urban air mobility earlier. EVTOLs, delivery drones. These things are going to need slots too, aren't they?
And this is where the slot concept is about to get a lot more complicated. The FAI is developing something called the UAS Traffic Management System, or UTM, which is scheduled for initial rollout in 2027. UTM will manage low-altitude airspace for drones and EVTOLs, and it will use dynamic slot allocation similar to CTOs, but at much finer granularity. We're talking seconds, not minutes. A delivery drone might need a slot to cross a specific intersection of urban airspace at a specific second, and if it misses that slot, it has to wait for the next available window.
The slot concept scales down from wide-body jets to pizza delivery drones. Same problem. Different timescale.
The current slot system manages runway access at airports. That's the ground interface. UTM will manage airspace access at low altitudes in urban environments. That's a three-dimensional problem. Instead of coordinating arrivals and departures at a single point, you're coordinating thousands of vehicles moving through a volume of airspace over a city. The computational complexity is orders of magnitude higher.
Who gets priority? The organ transplant drone or the Amazon package?
That's the question the FAI is grappling with right now. The current thinking is a tiered priority system. Emergency services and medical deliveries get top priority, then scheduled passenger EVTOTL services, then commercial cargo, then recreational drones. But defining those tiers and enforcing them in real time is a massive technical and regulatory challenge. And it's going to create a new kind of slot asset, low-altitude airspace access rights, which could become just as valuable as Heathrow slots in a world where drone delivery is ubiquitous.
The air above our heads is about to be sliced into temporal assets worth real money. That's either exciting or deeply dystopian, and I can't decide which.
It's both, as these things usually are. But the underlying principle is the same one that's governed aviation since the 1940s. When demand for a scarce resource exceeds supply, you need a system to allocate it. The question is always market, bureaucracy, or some hybrid. And we keep reinventing the same answer in different forms.
To pull this together for the listener who wants to sound smart the next time the captain mentions a slot, what's the framework?
Here's the decoder ring. When the captain says we're waiting for a slot, listen carefully to the wording. If they say we're waiting for a slot to become available or the airport is slot restricted, they're almost certainly talking about the historic system. The flight doesn't have rights to land or take off at that time, and they're waiting for an opening. If they say we've been given an earlier slot or our slot has been updated, that's the dynamic ATC system. The network manager, or FAA, just recalculated and improved their CTOT or EDCT. The first is about permission to operate. The second is about permission to move right now.
Waiting for a slot equals historic. Got an earlier slot equals dynamic.
That's the heuristic. It's not perfect. Sometimes the language blurs, but it's right most of the time. And the other thing to remember is that the scheduled departure time on your ticket is not the same as the CTOT. Airlines pad schedules to absorb slot delays, so the on-time performance you see on FlightAware or the airline's app is measured against the schedule, not against when ATC actually cleared them to leave.
The performance metric is a lie, a useful lie, but a lie.
A convenient fiction that keeps the system legible for passengers. If airlines reported on-time performance against CTOT, the numbers would be much worse, and passengers would be furious. But the schedule is the contract with the passenger, so that's what gets measured. It's one of those things where the deeper you look, the more you realize the entire system runs on carefully maintained illusions.
That's basically the thesis of this entire podcast. Carefully maintained illusions explained.
The slot system is one of the best examples. Two parallel allocation mechanisms, one from the 1940s and one from the 2020s, operating on different timescales, governed by different institutions, using the same word to mean different things, and it all somehow works well enough to move millions of people every day.
Until it doesn't. Which brings us to the reform question. You've got the EU tightening usage rules, the FAI studying secondary trading, the Frankfurt slot swap trials, the UTM system coming in 2027. Are we heading toward a unified slot market? Or are these two systems going to keep running in parallel forever?
I think we're heading toward a gradual convergence, but it'll take decades. The incumbents have too much to lose from rapid reform. What's more likely is that the dynamic system gets more sophisticated, real-time slot trading, better prediction of capacity, integration with UTM, while the historic system slowly erodes. The EU's tighter usage rules are already making it harder to hoard slots. If the US moves towards secondary trading, that could unlock a lot of value at JFK and LaGuardia. And as EVTOLs and drones create a third slot system at low altitude, the pressure to harmonize all three will grow.
The slot is a service model. Bid for your CTOT in real time. No grandfather rights. No biannual conference in some hotel ballroom.
There are proposals for exactly that. The most radical would replace the IATA slot conference entirely with a continuous auction. Airlines would bid for slots on a rolling basis, and prices would float with demand. But the legacy carriers have made it very clear they'll fight that to the last lawyer. Their slot portfolios are worth billions, and they're not going to let regulators vaporize that value without a fight.
The future is probably more hybrid. Markets layered on top of grandfathered rights. Dynamic adjustments layered on top of historic allocations. More complexity, not less.
Which is exactly what you'd expect from a system that evolved over 80 years and now has too many stakeholders with too many conflicting interests to be redesigned from scratch. It's not elegant. But it works, mostly.
That's aviation in four words. Not elegant, but it works mostly.
Now you know what the captain means when they mention a slot. You're not just waiting. You're witnessing the collision of two different systems, both trying to solve the same problem. Who gets to use the sky, and when?
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The oldest known document from Vanuatu is a fragment of a Lapita pottery shard dating to roughly 800 BCE, which contains trace residues of volcanic glass from the Ambrim volcano. Chemical analysis of the glass reveals an unusually high concentration of fluorine gas trapped in the silica matrix, about 4.7% by weight, suggesting the Ambrim eruption that produced this particular ash cloud was significantly more fluorine-rich than modern eruptions of the same volcano.
Fluorine-rich volcanic glass from ancient Vanuatu. I'll add that to my list of things I didn't know I needed to know.
4.7%.
Next time you're sitting on the tarmac waiting for a slot, remember, you're participating in an 80-year-old system that's worth more than most countries' GDP. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts.
See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.